Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It was a quiet town, the kind of place where the past lingers in the cracks of old brickwork and the creak of weathered floorboards. When Cassandra moved into the aging home on the edge of Pine Hollow, they were looking for a fresh start, a chance to build something new. What they found instead was a presence, a force that seemed to grow stronger with every passing night. It began subtly, drafts where no windows were open, shadows that danced just beyond the edge of sight. But soon, the house revealed its true nature. A child's voice whispered from the darkness, pleading for help, while warnings from an old neighbor painted an even darker picture. What was it about this house that kept drawing the living and the dead back to its walls? The line between reality and fear began to blur as the boy's cryptic messages hinted at something far more sinister lurking in the shadows. Could the boy be trusted, or was he just another piece of the puzzle, one that, when solved, might reveal something far more chilling? Let's get to the letter. They write, "Dear Tony, I'm not the kind of person who believes in ghosts, or at least I wasn't before I moved into the house. It was an old two-story Victorian on the edge of town, nestled among thick oaks and a crumbling stone fence. The kind of place that felt timeless, but also like it had been waiting too long for someone to care for it again. I thought I could be that person. The first few weeks passed without much incident. Sure, the house had its quirks. The floors groaned as if they were adjusting to my footsteps, and there was a slight chill that lingered in certain rooms, even when the heat was on. But it was an old house. What do you expect? And it wasn't until the third week that things started to feel off. It began with the tapping. At first, I thought it was just the pipes. The sound came from the walls, a steady tap, tap, tap that would start at random hours. I figured it was an old plumbing system groaning under pressure, but then I noticed something strange. The tapping would stop whenever I stepped into the room, and then it would start up again as soon as I left. One night, I decided to investigate. I pressed my ear to the wall in the hallway, hoping to figure out where the sound was coming from. For a moment, everything went silent. Then I heard it, clear as day. A faint, deliberate knock from the other side of the wall. Three knocks, evenly spaced, I jumped back, my heart pounding. There couldn't have been anyone on the other side. That part of the house faced the backyard. I tried to tell myself it was just my imagination, but deep down I knew it wasn't. Things escalated from there. Lights began flickering, even though I'd had the wiring inspected. Small objects, keys, a mug, my phone would disappear from where I'd left them, only to reappear in strange places like on top of the fridge or inside a drawer I hadn't opened in days. And then there were the shadows. The first time I saw it, I was heading upstairs to bed. The staircase has this wide landing with a tall window that overlooks the front yard. As I reached the top step, I saw something move, just a quick flicker of a dark shape, like someone darting across the landing. I froze, my hand tightening on the banister. I could feel my pulse in my throat. I told myself it was just the wind stirring the curtains, but when I turned around, the curtains were still. That was the first time I thought about leaving, but something stopped me. It's hard to explain, but I felt like the house wanted me to stay, like it was holding on to me somehow. I know that sounds crazy, but the more time I spent there, the more the idea took root in my mind. Then I started hearing the voice. It was late, past midnight. I just crawled into bed when I heard it, faint and childlike. "Help me." I sat up, my breath caught in my chest. The room was pitch dark, the kind of dark where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. For a moment, I thought I'd imagined it, But then it came again. Help me. It was coming from the hallway outside my bedroom. I didn't sleep that night. The next morning, I convinced myself it had to be a dream. Stress, fatigue, maybe even something I'd eaten. It could have been anything. But when I stepped out into the hallway, I found something that chilled me to the bone. There on the floor was a small toy truck. It wasn't mine. I don't have kids, and I'd never seen it before. The paint was chipped, the wheels rusted, but it was unmistakably a child's toy. I picked it up and turned it over in my hands, trying to think of a rational explanation. Had the previous owners left it behind? Had I somehow missed it during the move? But the hallway had been completely empty the night before. That was when I realized I wasn't alone in the house. Tony, I don't know how to explain it, but I could feel it. This heavy watching presence. It wasn't threatening, at least not yet, but it was there, lingering just out of reach. And then, as if to confirm my suspicions, I saw him. It was late again, maybe around 2 a.m. I was sitting on the couch trying to calm my nerves with a movie when I saw movement out of the corner of my eye. At first, I thought it was just a trick of the light. But when I turned to look, there he was, a boy, maybe 8 or 9 years old, standing in the hallway near the staircase. He was pale, almost translucent, and dressed in old-fashioned clothes, a white shirt with suspenders and dark trousers. He didn't move, didn't say a word, just stood there staring at me with the saddest eyes I've ever seen. I wanted to speak, to ask him who he was, but my throat felt like it was filled with sand. I could only sit there, frozen, as he slowly turned and walked away, disappearing into the shadows. Tony, I know how this sounds. I know what you're probably thinking, but I swear I'm not making this up. That boy was real, or at least as real as a ghost can be. And I think he's trying to tell me something, and that's when I started digging into the house's history. After seeing the boy, I knew I couldn't ignore what was happening. I went to the local library, hoping to find answers. The librarian, an older woman with kind eyes, seemed hesitant when I mentioned the address. That house, she said softly, has been through a lot. She handed me a folder with a few yellowed clippings. Most were mundane real estate listings and a couple of minor property disputes. But one article stood out. It was about the original owner, a man named Samuel Grayson. He lived there with his son Henry, who disappeared in 1912. The article mentioned a frantic search, a grieving father, and finally, whispers of madness. Samuel claimed he could still hear Henry's voice in the house, that his boy was stuck between worlds. The townsfolk dismissed it as grief, but the article hinted at something darker. It was unsettling to read, but it also felt like confirmation. The boy I'd seen had to be Henry. I started talking to him, hoping he'd respond. At first, it felt ridiculous, sitting alone in an empty house, speaking into the air, but I was desperate for answers. I'd say things like, Henry, are you there? Or, what do you want me to do? Most of the time, there was no response. But one night, as I stood at the top of the staircase, I heard his voice again. They're looking for space, he said, his tone almost matter-of-fact, and I froze. Who's looking for space? I asked. The men beside me, he replied. That was the first time I felt truly afraid. There was something in his voice, a fear that wasn't entirely his own. I didn't understand what he meant, but I couldn't shake the feeling that whatever these men were, they weren't friendly. The activity in the house escalated after that. Doors would slam on their own, even when I'd made sure they were latched. Heavy footsteps echoed from the upstairs rooms, though no one was there. My dogs, who had always been calm and well-behaved, started growling at corners and refusing to go near the staircase. One night I woke up to the sound of shattering glass. I rushed downstairs to find the mirror in the hallway had cracked clean down the middle. Written in the fogged-up glass were three words, "Help him leave." The next morning I spoke to my elderly neighbor, Mrs. Carlisle. She lived in Pine Hollow her entire life and knew the house's history better than anyone. When I mentioned Henry, she nodded gravely. He's not the problem, she said. It's what's tied to him. Those men, they're not like him. They're angry, restless, and they'll do anything to keep him from moving on. Her words sent chills down my spine. That night, Henry appeared again. This time, he looked different, paler, more transparent, as if he were fading. "They're getting stronger," he said, his voice trembling. "I can't hold them back much longer." I knew I had to do something. I spent hours researching rituals, looking for anything that might help. Finally, I decided to try a simple visualization exercise. I sat in the living room with a single candle burning and told Henry to picture a light, bright, warm, and welcoming. "Walk toward it," I urged him. "There's nothing to be afraid of." At first, nothing happened. Then, the house seemed to come alive. The walls groaned, the lights flickered, and a cold wind whipped through the room. I heard faint whispers, growing louder and more frantic, as if something or someone was trying to stop him. And then, just as suddenly as it began, it stopped. For a moment, the house was eerily quiet. Then I heard Henry's voice, clear and joyful. "I see it. I see it. There they are." The sense of relief was overwhelming. I felt tears streaming down my face as I whispered, "Go to them, Henry. Be free." After that night, I never saw Henry again. But the house didn't go completely quiet. The whispers and footsteps still linger, faint but persistent. And sometimes, late at night, I feel a presence watching me. Not malevolent, but not entirely comforting either. Tony, I don't know what to make of it. Did I truly help Henry move on, or did I just open the door for something worse? Whatever the case, I don't think I'll ever see this house the same way again. Thank you for listening. I hope you can help me understand what happened. Yours, Cassandra. Cassandra's story leaves us with more questions than answers, and perhaps that's the nature of the unexplained. On one hand, we see the possibility of a boy trapped by tragedy, yearning for release and finally finding peace. On the other, there's the unsettling notion that the entities surrounding him, the men beside him, were far more dangerous than they first appeared. Psychologically, stories like Cassandra's can stem from a variety of factors. Sleep paralysis, heightened stress, or even the power of suggestion might explain some of what she experienced. Our brains are wired to find patterns, even where there are none. And in an old house with a rich and eerie history, it's easy to see how imagination might fill in the gaps. But then, there are the moments that defy simple explanation. The synchronized activity, the whispered warnings, the toy that appeared from nowhere. These aren't easily dismissed. And perhaps most compelling of all is the emotional impact Henry's departure had on Cassandra. She describes a profound sense of peace, as though helping him move on gave her a kind of closure she didn't even know she needed. So what do we make of the men beside him? Were they echoes of Pine Hollow's darker past or something older? Something that predates the house itself? It's possible that whatever energy tied Henry to this world was also feeding off the pain and grief left behind. And when he left, did that energy truly dissipate? Or did it stay, waiting for the next vulnerable soul to walk through those doors? Cassandra's experience reminds us that the paranormal isn't always as clear-cut as it seems. For every spirit seeking help, there might be others with motives far more mysterious. And for those of us who live for these stories, perhaps the most haunting question of all is this. If something reaches out to you, how do you know if it's a cry for help or a warning to stay away? Until next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. You never know what might be waiting in the shadows.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.